Welcome back. It is Farm Talk. I'm Mick Kerr, North Dakota Corn Council Studio. Well, we're going to talk about haying now on a year where we're, a lot of hay producers, forage producers, got a lack of hay to feed the cows. But let's talk about growing it now, a conversation we had earlier this month. Here's the National Hay Association's Sue Arnold, Executive Director. Hello, Sue. What is the National Hay Association all about? How long have you been around?
This year we are celebrating our 125th year in service to the United States. Our task has not changed through the years. In 1895, the United States Department of Agriculture set up the National Hay Association, we call it the NHA, to keep the hay industry ethical. And that's our motto. It's interesting because we have almost 500 members. All of them are doing the same thing, and that is either producing forage products or selling equipment or machinery, twine, whatever, to the forage industry. So we do the same thing, but we all believe that we're better together. And so we cooperate, work together, and keep the forage industry in the United States ethical.
Now, there's groups like the National Grain and Feed Association. Is alfalfa part of the National Hay Association, or are you just like hay, prairie hay?
No, sir. It's any forage, so it's any kind of hay, any kind of straw, and we deal, all of our members, all of our producers are in the United States. We do have what we call associate members, and those are equipment manufacturers outside of the U.S., but we have 35 members that control about 80% of all the forage that's being exported out of the United States. The interesting part of that is that though that represents millions and millions of tons of forage, almost 90% of the hay grown in the U.S. stays in the U.S. So again, we're better together. It's up to the guys domestically to keep our forage industry satisfied so that those guys on the West Coast can export and keep the international market satisfied.
We've been visiting for a couple of minutes now, and it took me that long to do the math. So if you were organized in 1895, you're celebrating your 125th anniversary.
We absolutely are. This is a big year for us. We are publishing a 125th anniversary book that will be available in September. We've never done that before. And it's interesting because though we're 125 years old, not much has changed in the hay industry. We still grow it. We still bale it. We still market it. The equipment might have changed, but it's a very labor-intensive industry. It's a very, you have to be strong in knowledge because you can't depend on the weather, you can't depend on the market, and so, you know, it's kind of all time-consuming, but our members are great together, and I would encourage you to join the National Hay Association if you're in the forage industry. You will find that the networking will far pay back on the enroll membership fee.
Well, associations work on policy and legislative issues. So what bureaucratic challenges do we have both at the national or regional level?
Well, of course, right now, China is of concern to us. You know, it was of concern to us before the coronavirus set in. Coronavirus has allowed us some new interesting challenges. The containers that are going over, we can't get unloaded because their workers aren't working, and because of that, their containers aren't being filled with their products, so containers aren't coming back. So the China tariffs, we've been dealing with that. We are working real hard to get into the Indian market now. There's a lot of dairy cattle in India, and so there's a big market for hay over there, so we're working hard to get into the India market. But we have a subcommittee of the National Hay Association called the United States Forage Export Council, USAFEC, and they work daily with the Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C. to work to get policies changed and updated.
All right. Now, everybody, corn, soybeans, wheat, pork, beef, chicken, they all want to export their products. But hay seems to be somewhat of a, not delicate, but is it able to be exported and get over there in high quality?
It really is. The number one issue with exporting hay is the humidity that it's loaded into a container. And that's why all of our hay goes off the West Coast. That hay is dry. It's easy to control the moisture in that because you understand the weather is so much more predictable there. But we do have some interesting things happening on the East Coast. We have some hay dryers that are now seem to be able to do a pretty good job. They're drying the hay relatively quickly. And we're going to see what happens with that, because it may be such that within a year or two, we can do some exporting to the Europe market off of the East Coast. And again, that will be a wonderful advantage for our eastern producers.
I would assume they're, though, a little concerned about some of the alfalfa that might not be totally conventional.
That's right. That's right. And you know, depending on the market, GMO is a big concern. In Japan, we control the Japanese beetles in our hay over there. So every market's a little different, and that's why it's important to work together to make sure that, you know, what one customer wants, we can all understand and learn from each other.
Sue Arnold, she's the executive director of the National Hay Association. Other issues that you're working on to represent forage producers?
Well, I guess right now in the East, hay is kind of at a premium. So we're working really hard to be able to supply the market and work to keep our prices fair. You know, everybody wants to make money when the market's low, but you got to realize that next year there might be an abundance of hay. And so we work really hard to keep that market at a fair and equitable price, both for the seller and the buyer. And also, if you're going to sell top quality hay and market it as top quality hay, that's the hay you deliver to the customer. And we work hard to do that.
Absolutely. So why should a farmer in the Dakotas or Minnesota join the National Hay Association?
Because you can network with people around the country. And while growing hay in Minnesota is different than growing hay in Ohio, the equipment is all the same. And you will learn a lot from someone. Just this morning, there was a big discussion about whether you should put concrete floor in a hay barn or an asphalt floor in a hay barn. And the discussion was very interesting. And so, you know, before you make a mistake, learn from somebody else who made that mistake and learned from it.
Okay, what's the website?
www.nationalhay.org.
And we wandered over to a company that some of you in the Dakotas are familiar with, Protexia. It's a bale wrap and some grain bags and other things, and Benjamin Omet is the president of the company. Hello, Benjamin.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am very good, thank you. And I understand you've made your way into the market in the Dakotas.
Yes, we did. It's our third year here at the show. We've been in the U.S. for 4 years now. And we came up with a very innovative product.
And tell us a little bit about the bale wrap first.
So everyone's familiar with standard bale wrap that you use to wrap bales, you know, wet hay. And we came up with an additive that we put inside of the plastic when the rolls are manufactured that is non-toxic, non-dangerous, and that repels birds, rodents, and raccoons.
All right. But it still is not good for the cows to eat this bale wrap?
Oh, it's still plastic, so the cows can't eat it, but it has no impact on them whatsoever. They wouldn't eat a standard silage wrap anyway.
Uh-huh. Okay, all right. So what's the magic with this with bale wrap that keeps the rodents and the birds and some weather out of there?
Well, the additive is made out of over 600 essential oils. It's a mix, proprietary mix that we use that acts on the sensory systems of the intended targets. So basically, rats, rodents, mice, raccoons can smell it when they get really close. Same for the birds. And it's not a pesticide, it doesn't kill them. It has zero impact on the feed, on the environment, on the cattle, on the farmers. It really acts just on the intended targets to repel them.
Okay. And is the Protexia bale wrap available everywhere, anywhere?
Yes, absolutely. We ship all over North America from Protexia, and we're also present in 11 countries all over the world.
Okay. Euro bagging is kind of your slogan, huh?
Euro bagging is the brand of our silage bags and grain bags. Okay. We also have those bags available with the repellent that are called Agri-Repel. It's the name of our range of products that are repellent. It works exactly the same way as the bale wrap. You use them exactly as the same as standard grain bags, so it won't change anything as far as your equipment, your machinery, the way you do things usually. But what it does is that it really repels the birds and rodents, which up until we came up with that invention was really a big problem, a lot of spoilage caused by those animals and pests.
Yeah. Okay.
And we are growing rapidly. We are building a dealer network here in the US and in Canada. So yeah, it's been very a good adventure for us.
Yeah.
We already have some customers in the Dakotas, in Minnesota as well. But you know, if you want to know more about us, you can go on our website, protexia-plast.com, or give us a call, 1-800-935-3011.
Benjamin Ome of Protexia, spelled just like it sounds.